Skagway considers what to do next after the voter rejection of the Tidelands lease, and the Jilkat Kwan Heritage Center in Klukwan is working from a variety of funding sources to prepare for a spring opening. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories up next. Earlier this month, Skagway voters overwhelmingly rejected a 35-year Tidelands lease between the municipality and the parent company of White Pass and Yukon Route Railroad. In a single day, 69% of voters threw out a lease that took years to negotiate. Now the question is, what happens next? White Pass has leased Tidelands from the municipality for more than 40 years. The new lease would have continued that relationship, but with some different terms. It also would have given the municipality access for the Gateway Project. The project includes cleanup of legacy contamination in the ore terminal and expansion of the existing port facilities, including a floating dock for newer, bigger cruise ships. Gateway Project Manager Chad Gubala spoke at last week's Borough Assembly meeting.
One of the principal components of Gateway, or an important component of Gateway, being the mitigation component, that ball keeps bouncing. So as much as Gateway may be, the project itself may be in question, the need for the mitigation is still there. It's not going to go away until it's dealt with.
The Gateway Project is near the 75% design phase, and it's going through state and federal permitting. But since the lease was rejected, it's unclear how the municipality can execute the project without control of the Tidelands.
I think it's good to base all of your decisions upon the community here, your port is a strategic global port. It serves a broad area, and it's got impact beyond this room.
And then there's the question of what to do about the lease. Should the municipality try to go back to the negotiating table? Should Skagway wait until the current lease expires in 2023 and take control of the docks? Several members of the public have said at recent meetings that whatever happens, they want to be included in that decision. Here's Charles Stearns.
Try to find out what the town really thinks and try to involve them more.
The assembly plans to take a step in that direction with a post-election survey asking why people voted the way they did. They hope for an independent organization like the McDowell Group to conduct the survey. Here's Assemblyman Spencer Morgan.
The overwhelming question or the overwhelming answer we need to find out is, does the community want a lease or not?
That's a good one.
And that was not answered, like you said, yeah. With a no vote.
Assembly member Steve Burnham Jr. was on the lease negotiating team. He said, moving forward, the assembly should foster public involvement as much as possible.
It's important to try to do the correct thing this time because it's perceived that we didn't do the correct thing before. Now, I feel that we always attempted to do the correct thing, but obviously other people don't agree, and the majority don't agree. So it's important to not do it wrong again.
Burnham has said that in retrospect, he thinks the lease would have been on firmer ground if the assembly had included the public more when they were deciding on the minimum terms. Assemblyman Dan Henry, who was also on the negotiating team, says he supports public input, but he thinks it would have been inefficient to involve the public in lease discussions.
Can you imagine a room full of people trying to discuss and give input and reasons for and against why each and every little item is wrong or is good? Can you imagine it?
He said the public elects assembly members to immerse themselves in jobs like lease negotiations. He pointed to the long process the Skagway trapping ordinance went through as an example of how opening something to public input can be ineffective. Henry says he is not optimistic about what will happen in the aftermath of the lease rejection.
Partnering with White Pass, as we have done for 115 years, which has turned into a pretty damn good thing, seeing that we're deciding to sever that relationship, I think is a very bad move.
He thinks the municipality won't be able to get site control for the Gateway Project, and that Skagway will be stuck with the entire cost of remediation. Former Assembly Member Gary Hansen, who was on the negotiating team but dropped out, has a different view.
I'm happy. I feel vindicated.
Hansen spoke with KHNS the day after the lease was voted down. He said Skagway should have control of its own tidelands.
I've always felt that when the current lease expires in 2023, it'll be time for the municipality to take over so that we can finally have some unfettered control of our waterfront.
For now, the only clear next step the Assembly has decided on is to ask the public why they rejected the tidelands lease. Then they hope to tackle the big questions. How can they proceed with cleaning up the contaminated harbor? What will the town's relationship with White Pass be like now? And who will control the tidelands? It was a sold-out event Saturday night in Klukwan, with locals feasting on moose and salmon and bidding on a variety of items in a live auction. The proceeds from the annual fundraiser will go toward the completion of the Jilkat Kwan Heritage Center. The center is set to open, at least partially, this spring. KHNS's Jillian Rogers attended the event and filed this update.
Over the past year, around $2 million has come in toward the completion of the center. Grants, loans, and private donations from fundraising efforts make up the money raised so far. As a result, the center is now just months away from opening. Saturday night was the 10th annual crusade, with 100 tickets sold at $50 a pop. But the big money came in during the auction. 70, now 80, now 90. Project director Lonnie Hotch told the crowd that with some new income sources, the center should be able to open its doors in 2016. Even if the massive multi-million-dollar project is not completely done.
And if none of that other money comes through, we'll still be able to open our doors next spring.
Yay. She said being this close to opening is a huge relief, since she feels like she's been working on this her whole adult life.
When I was just a young adult, the idea first surfaced, and they got a grant, I think, from the National Endowment for the Arts back in the late 70s, I think.
Over the last 12 months, the center has received grants large and small. That includes a recent one from the Cerdna Foundation, which helped pay for commissioned artwork for the cultural landscape map. Hotch called the map the grounding exhibit.
It'll be the first thing you see when you walk in the exhibit hall. And we've got 5 artists lined up at this point. One is still pending.
Hotch said the purpose of the map is to introduce visitors to the Chilkat people and their ancestral lands. The Heritage Center has been in the works, even just as a concept, for decades. Years ago, art dealers and collectors trying to remove and sell artifacts from the area sparked concern and a local law prohibiting the removal of tribal relics. It was around then, more than 20 years ago, that Klukwan residents decided they needed a safe place to display these precious pieces and show off their cultural history on their own terms.
It just got to the point where people drew a line in the sand. That's it. We don't want anything more to leave.
Money from the Institute of Museum and Library Services will go toward the installation of various pieces and exhibits. An award from the National Park Service is helping to pay carvers who are adzing the interior of the clan house where the famous Whale House collection will live. The collection, which features 4 intricately carved house posts, a feasting dish, and a screen, is on loan to the Heritage Center.
We're pretty much just going to install it just how it was situated in the historic photos. So not a whole lot of design needs to go into that.
Hotch told the crowd that the center received $1.1 million from an unexpected source, the Bureau of Indian Affairs Tribal Transportation Fund. That fund is used to pay for roads or trails that incorporate a visitor center, but it can also go towards creating and upgrading the buildings themselves. The Rasmussen Foundation also granted $750,000, which allowed a contract to be finalized with Dawson Construction.
So they are mobilizing right now. Things are starting to happen. It's so exciting.
A $350,000 loan from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Rural Development Loan Program is still pending, but if it goes through, the money will pay for a classroom and offices. Hotch said the center is still waiting to hear from the Murdoch Charitable Trust, Representatives did a site visit last month, but they still haven't made a decision on the $600,000 endowment.
And we've always taken the approach of do what we can with what we have and just keep moving forward. And so it's worked for us. And it just seems like people are willing to get behind you when they see that. Do what you can with what you have.
Hotch likened the project's long history to a famous story told about her ancestors crossing Desdiash Lake in the winter. And now, she said, that long, cold journey is almost over. Reporting in Klukwan, I'm Jillian Rogers.
For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.